So I want to take up in June the 24th, 1913. This is volume 11. The soul has no appetite for good, which is an extraordinary title for a piece. The soul has no appetite for good, feels a sort of nausea and repulsion for good itself. Therefore, these souls are the refuse of God. Wow. June the 24th, 1913. Okay. So a soul that has no appetite for good is of no use to the Lord. That's a frightening thought, isn't it? Okay. So August the 20th, 1913. Three major things here. Trust, simplicity and disinterest. You see them in the heading? Yeah. Are for herself are necessary for the soul who lives in the divine will. Trust, simplicity and disinterest. Now that you found all of them in volumes 1 to 5. These were all given as foundational stuff. So what you're given here then is as a reminder of something you've heard already. So while I was praying, I saw my beloved Jesus within me. Now to see Jesus within you is Luke 17:21. The kingdom of God is within you. Okay. And I saw many souls around me. Remember we said before that we all of us have to take souls to heaven with us. Who were saying, Lord, you have placed everything in this soul, which is exactly what he's been trying to tell Louisa. And stretching out their hands towards me, they said to me, since Jesus is in you and with him all goods, because he brings everything with him, take and give to us. So do you remember the tradition we have of St. Patrick, that having escaped slavery in Ireland, he went back to Britain and then he heard the Irish calling him back, right. Come back and save us. And go back 2,000 years before that, not quite 2,000, and you have St. Paul travelling in what today we call Turkey. In those days they called it Asia Minor. And he heard the Macedonian saying, come over and save us. Okay. Now, here Louisa is hearing a call from souls who will be living in the divine will. Okay, that's us, saying to her, come and help us. So she's hearing the call from us. That's why I gave you Patrick and Paul first, yes. So that you'd see that there was precedent for this. Okay. And so she said, I remained confused, and blessed Jesus said, my daughter, in my will there are all possible goods. That means you get everything there. And it is necessary for the soul who lives in it to be in it. In other words, to really dwell in the divine will. Ring that little bit, to really dwell in it. And you've got to be there with trust, because you know from rearing children that if a child doesn't trust you, there's nothing pushing you to be extra generous or anything with the child. The child's trust will do it. And you've got to operate as the owner together with me. If the one divine will that operates in the Blessed Trinity is operating in us as well, then Jesus said, act as the owner because you are. Isn't that incredible? Mm-hmm. So now the literal meaning of incredible means beyond belief, but that's not the way we use the word. We mean amazing. Okay. So human creatures expect everything from this soul. The reason is that you put Romans 8:19 beside that. Romans 8:19. Okay. Human creatures expect everything from this soul. And if they do not receive, they feel defrauded. But how can she give if she does not operate together with me with full trust? Now, notice the full trust, because if you don't operate with full trust, you're not allowing him to come through properly. That's like saying, if I don't turn the tap on, just turn it off. If I don't turn the tap on fully, I'm not going to get the full amount of water that's available to come to me, am I? No. Okay. Now, it's the trust that enables us to draw fully from the Lord. Okay. Now, St. Therese of Lisieux, I've given you this many times, has said that you will get from God exactly the amount you trust him for. Trust him 10%, you get 10%. Trust him 40%, you get 40%. Will you pass it over to me? Just press the down button. No, it's just somebody determined to get through. That's all. So, therefore, trust in order to give. Okay. Now, notice, we have to receive everything from him. We get everything by trusting him. And we are the ones who have to give to other souls. But we have nothing of ourselves. We have to take everything from him. For example, if I want to bathe the holy souls in purgatory with the precious blood of the Lamb for their release, then I have to take it from him, haven't I? I don't have anything. And I have no right to that. Take that precious blood unless I fuse and enter into him. And in the divine will, I can, as the owner, take the precious blood of the Lamb, make it my own, and bathe the holy souls in purgatory with it to release them. You should do that at every nanosecond. There's 60 seconds in a minute. There's about a million nanoseconds in a second. And all you've got to do is place the intention, Lord, I want to enter into you at every nanosecond, and I want to take your precious blood with your will, make it my own, and at every nanosecond of time that exists, while the earth exists, I want to bathe the souls in purgatory with your precious blood. And you'll get souls out of purgatory by the million.
Oh, God.
Please don't miss it. It's unbelievable treasure.
Please read it out. Call out again.
Just very quickly. No, no. I fuse in the divine will. I fuse in the divine will. So I enter into Jesus, okay, in that fusing. And with his divine will, I take possession of his precious blood. And I can only do it fused in the divine will. I can't do it any other way. He says, act as the owner. And if we act as the owner, we have to give to others. So I now have taken the precious blood and made it my own. I'm the owner. Is that okay? Mm-hmm. What I want to do with this very badly, well, what I do every single day is I do three things. One, I want to bathe the holy souls in purgatory continuously without ever a break. Every single nanosecond. I want to bathe them in the precious blood of the Lamb for their release into heaven. The second thing is I want to bathe all souls who are dying, past, present and future, with the precious blood of the Lamb for their the dying. I want to bathe the dying in the precious blood of the Lamb for their surrender to God and their salvation. So you want two things for them, their surrender to God and salvation. For their surrender to God and for their salvation. And the third thing in this crisis world that we're living in, I bathe all souls, past, present and future, in the precious blood of the Lamb so that they will all know him. So that they will all know him and they can all be saved. You should do that every single day. Okay. So that they will know the Lord and that they will be saved. Regardless of colour, creed, class, religion or anything else, that they will come to know the Lord.
And be saved.
Yeah. You see, when we read something like this in the writings, we need to know how to put it into practice as well. Do you know what I mean? otherwise, it's just a nice information that's here.
Yeah,
but you have to be able to act as the owner as well. Is that okay? So we can talk about that later again. So we have to trust the Lord to give us this in order to give. We have to have the simplicity in order to communicate ourselves to everybody. And the simplicity means that you're not going to get all complicated and start rationalizing about it and theologizing about it and philosophizing about it, which sends people down the tubes. Okay. You have to have the simplicity in order to communicate yourself to all. You have to have the disinterest for yourself. You're not praying for yourself. You're praying for everybody else. In the divine will, we don't pray for ourselves. We have enough disinterest in ourselves to be able to live completely for Jesus and for her neighbour. Therefore, you fulfil the command of Jesus in John 13:34, that you shall love your neighbour as Jesus has loved them. And he... Just keep it up. okay. The amazing thing at the end of this paragraph, Jesus says, "That's the way I am. That's the way I operate. Look at that. Mm-hmm. That's the way I operate." It's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Okay. So Jesus is saying that the immense treasures of the divine will that he makes available for everybody. Okay. And then he added, "My daughter, it happens to one who truly does my will as to a grafted tree." He says it's the same as if you're grafting something onto a tree. Some people know how to persevere, don't they? No, they don't get the message. The power of the graft has the power of destroying the life of the tree which receives the graft. So one can no longer see the fruits and the leaves of the first tree, but those of the graft. Now, this is a lesson in horticulture, whether you understand it or not. And if the first tree said to the graft, "I want to keep at least a little branch for myself so that I too may be able to give some fruits and make everybody know that I still exist." Now, that's us, you see, giving ourselves to the divine will. And we want to keep a little bit so that we, you know, the old self, I can touch it and I know this is me. You know what I mean? I was always like this. You know what I mean? And I've always been like this is the excuse that people give when they don't want to give themselves to God. I've always been like this. So the graft would say, and for us, the graft is the divine will. "You've no more reason to exist after you've submitted yourself to receiving my graft. Life will be all mine." In the same way, the soul who does my will can say, "My life is ended." That's Galatians 2:20. Galatians 2:20. "I no longer live, but Christ lives in me." It is no longer my works, my thoughts, my words that will come out of me, but the works, the thoughts and the words of the one whose will is my life. So, to the one who does my will, I say, "You are my life, my blood and my bones." In other words, Christ on earth, another Christ. And the church has taught us that from the beginning, that each one of us is called to be another Christ. The true and real sacramental transformation takes place, not by virtue of the words of the priest, but by virtue of my will. That means we become a living host by virtue of the divine will. Okay? As soon as the soul decides to live out from my volition, my will creates myself in the soul. That means he literally bilocates himself in each one of us so that he creates what the only language I can use is a little incarnation inside of himself. Okay? You know those Russian dolls where you have yeah. another doll inside and each one is identical to the other? It's like that, he's creating himself in us. Now, what people see is the ordinary you. Even you don't see the extraordinary thing that's going on inside of you, you know? As soon as the soul decides to live from my volition, my will creates myself in the soul, and my will flows in the will, in the works, and in the steps of the soul. Now notice he doesn't say in the body. Mm-hmm. Notice that this is completely spiritual because your will is your highest faculty and he's operating through your will. Is that okay? So she undergoes as many of my creations. It happens just as to a pyx full of consecrated particles. There are as many Jesuses for as many particles, one for each particle. In the same way, by virtue of my will, the soul contains myself in her whole being as well as in each part of it. Therefore, you become a living host. One who does my will fulfills the true eternal communion and a communion with complete fruit. Now, this requires a lot of meditation to try and take it on board. And I think that if you're reading this for yourself, there's a very simple thing to do. And just to say, Lord, translate that into my being. And if my intellect can't get it, bypass it, just translate it into my being. I want the reality of this. Okay. Because he's trying to tell us that if he is going to live his complete, full life in us, and we don't trust him to do it fully, it would be a terrible thing, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. And if we don't have enough simplicity to just let it happen, because we hear him saying to Louisa, time out of number, let me do, just give me the freedom to do it. Is that okay? So he wants to make of us a living host. Now, I'm going to give you a very crude example. Supposing I am living inside of this person. Can't I see out through the person's eyes? Can't I hear through the person's ears? Can't I speak through their mouths? Mm-hmm. Can't I work through their hands? Can't I go where they go? That's exactly what Jesus, how he operates. And the more conscious we are of him being within us and wanting to be the one that who does all the operation, the more you will allow him to gaze lovingly on a soul that needs to be touched. Somebody who can't hear words. You know what I mean? Or you will just lay a hand on somebody who is ill and who needs the comfort to be made well again, or whatever it is. You're actually letting him do it. You're giving him the opportunity to do it. Am I making sense?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So let's go on to August the 27th, 1913. The enemy cannot approach the soul who lives in the divine will directly. Now, it's the directly you've got to look at. He will try it indirectly. Why can't he do it directly? Because he can't stand the divine will. I mean, he can't endure it. He can't bear it. So finding myself in my usual state, I was lamenting to my lovable Jesus about my poor current state. And with all the bitterness of my soul, I said to him, life of my life, you don't want to have compassion on me anymore. Why live? You don't want to use me anymore. Everything is over. Now, you don't want to use me anymore is Louisa harking back to the fact that she used to go through the crucifixion. She used to take the thorns or whatever else, and it was all this physical suffering. Now, he's been trying to wean her off that for the past four volumes. He's been doing it very gently and very slowly because as human beings, we find it difficult to shift in a vocational sense. Some of us find it difficult to shift anyway. So the Lord has to be very, very gentle with her. And so she falls back into this thing, but I'm no use. I'm not doing anything. And what she's expressing is what may have come to us as well. And that is that in the divine will, you appear to be doing nothing. You appear to be doing nothing. And yet he says you're doing everything if you're praying in the divine will. So she said, everything's over. My bitterness is such and so great that I feel petrified because of the pain. Now, you're not using me anymore. And yet she says, I feel petrified because of the pain. I've told you many times that Louisa won't acknowledge so far that the privation is her biggest cross. But she will acknowledge it eventually. And what is more is that while I remain all abandoned in your arms, and if I gave not, as if I gave not a thought to my great misfortune, others, and you know who they are, whisper in my ear, and how is this, and why? Maybe you've committed sins, maybe you've become distracted. Now guess who's saying all that to her? The only people that are around are the priests, and the very few visitors that she has. So they're all saying, well, if everything has changed, you must have done something, you know, wrong. And what is worse than that, while they say this, I feel that I don't want to hear them, as if they would interrupt the sleep. Look at that. Now, what's going on is actually interrupting the deep tranquility she has in the divine will. She has this extraordinary, and she calls it sleep, which is Psalm 131. My soul is like a weaned child on its mother's lap. Okay. So I don't want to hear them, she said, as if they would interrupt the sleep that you make me have in the arms of your divine will. So there's the child in on its mother's lap. Oh, Jesus, maybe you did not pay attention to how hard this pain is for me. Otherwise, you would come to my aid. And I told him many other silly things. And Jesus said, my daughter, poor daughter of mine, they, you know who they are, want to sadden you, don't they? In other words, there's something wrong. Ah, my daughter, human beings are very good at that, aren't they? Mm-hmm. They're quick to see if they think something is wrong. Ah, my daughter, I do so much to keep you at peace and they want to disturb you. No. Know that if you dared to offend me, I would be the first to be saddened and the first to tell you. Why? Because you cannot sin and be in the divine will. The two of them are completely contrary. You cannot do it. So put your Hebrews 12:14 there. Nothing unholy or unworthy can enter the presence of God. And since I do not tell you anything, do not worry. But do you want to know who is the cause of all of this, really? He said, it's the devil. Now, we don't like saying that, you know, something that people around me have said to me is actually coming ultimately from the devil. But that is actually the truth, because the battle that's going on all around us is completely spiritual, and it's on a spiritual level. And we are just sort of caught up in the maelstrom of this thing, and we have to make decisions all the time as to whose side we're on. And Jesus says, the devil is consumed with rage, and every time you speak about the effects of my will to those who approach you, he blows up in fury. And unable to approach one who does my will directly, he goes round approaching those who can get close to you under the appearance of good. See the way it works?
Yeah.
In order to obtain at least the miserable intent of disturbing the serene heaven of the soul in whom I delight to dwell. Now, it's very, very important. Why is the devil in a rage? The devil is in a rage because if Jesus succeeds in getting one person who comes from the fallen human race to come into this extraordinary position of coming back to where Adam left off, then the devil knows his game's up.
Mm-hmm.
His game is up, because others will be able to do it then. The door's open for everybody else. And so he sees his final fall on the horizon. That's his fury. That's what it is. So it's nothing to do with us individually. No. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's to do with this much
spiritual,
bigger thing.
Yeah.
Oh, totally spiritual warfare, yeah. So he thunders any lightnings from afar. Now, look at the image that's given to you. Thunder and lightning, disturbing stuff, you know, and you have to hear it and so on. But it's from afar, because the devil can't get near the divine will. Thinking that he's doing something, but poor him, the power of my will breaks his legs. Now, that's human language. The devil doesn't have to have legs. He's a spirit. OK. Breaks his legs means it takes power from him. OK. making those thunders and lightnings fall upon himself, and he left more furious than before. In other words, his downfall is accelerating. Furthermore, what you say, Jesus said, is not true. What is the purpose of my state? You must know that for the soul who truly does my will, the power, my book says virtue, the power of my will is such and so great that if I get close to the place where the soul lives in order to send chastisements, finding my will there and my own love, I do not feel like punishing myself in that soul. Now, let's translate that into English. She's talking about Corato, where she lives. So here am I living in Selbridge. And the Lord is saying that the people in Selbridge deserve a chastisement, but there are some folks in Selbridge trying to live the divine will. So he says, if some of them are trying to live the divine will, he said, I won't touch the place. Look at the way we protect the people around us. Just realise it. That one person in an area trying to live the divine will, no, I say trying because we're not at Louise's level, but one person trying to live the divine will brings enormous protection to everybody else. I think it's terribly important to see that. And that came home to me very clearly when we saw Storm Lorenzo approaching Ireland. And initially, its track was to cover the whole of Ireland. And I said to myself, no, no, there are too many people trying to live the divine will. Yeah. He'll push it aside. And he did. Yeah. And that's the second time he's pushed a major storm aside. Yeah. And they tried to blame the forecasters, but the forecasters were right. Because I actually saw the track of the storm. It was due to cover Ireland. But I said, no, no, no. There are too many trying to live the divine will. So he'll push it aside again. And look at how the whole nation was protected from a devastating storm. Because there are some people trying to live the divine will. I give you these examples to make sure that you see that this has very practical consequences for the people around us, just as it had for Louisa. It's not very consoling. So rather I remain wounded and I faint, he said, and instead of chastising, I go and throw myself in the arms of that soul who contains my will and my love. I rest and I remain cheered. Isn't that lovely?
Mm-hmm.
If you knew into what constraints of love you put me, and this is you plural now for everybody here as well, and how much I suffer when I see you in the least bit saddened or disturbed because of me, you would be more content and others would abstain from causing you bother, is the little ticking off for the priests. Okay. And Louisa said, you see, Jesus, how much evil I do to the point of making you suffer so much. She still hasn't got it. That if Jesus is living inside of me, really, not just mystically, and that I have pain, he feels it. Whether the pain is physical, mental, emotional or spiritual, he feels it. Why? Because he's real. He's real. That's Louisa still hasn't got it. I don't blame her. She's the first. I only get it very slowly. I don't know about you. My daughter, he said, do not trouble yourself because of this. The sufferings that come to me from the love of the soul contain great joys also, because true love, though it brings sufferings, is never separated from the great joy and unspeakable contentment. Okay. Beside that, I want to give you Hebrews 12:2. For the joy that was set before him, he endured the cross, despising the shame. Now, in the volumes that have led up to this, Hebrews 12:2, you've heard Louisa say over and over again when she was going through the Passion, I'm experiencing intense pain, but I have intense contentment as well. The intensity of the pain is balanced by the intensity of the contentment, or the peace, or whatever way you want to call it. And in the hours of the Passion, I think she mentions that even at the worst moments leading up to the death of Jesus on the cross, he had the inner contentment of knowing that his sacrifice was going to benefit all humanity. So it's a bitterness with peace, a bitterness with joy, a bitterness with love. The whole thing is balanced. anything that, that involves God involves real balance. Anything that involves Satan, it's out of balance. Okay. And that's why you have victim souls, and we had plenty of them in the 20th century, who would suffer terribly, and they had great joy. I mean, one of the things they say about Padre Pio was his great laughter. And he could cause everybody else to laugh as well. And yet he was suffering intensely all the time, you know. Just to give you one example. So let's come to September the 3rd, 1913. When Jesus places the soul in his will and she takes up staple dwelling in it. Now, would you ring that little word staple? And right above it, 24/7/3/6/5. No days off. Okay, staple dwelling in it. Just like Jesus, she feels the need to give to all. Now, the deeper we go into the divine will, the more you are led to pray for all souls, past, present and future. We started the journey out in ordinary spirituality where you wanted to pray for the people you loved and the people around you and the people in your family. And it's all very narrow and confined. And in the divine will, he puts you out there that every soul, past, present and future, is your family. They are your flesh and blood. You pray for them all. Okay. So Louisa said while I was praying, although I don't really know how to explain myself well, this might be a subtle pride of mine, I never think about myself and my great miseries. Well, that's precisely what Jesus has been teaching her for all these volumes, that you have to put yourself aside and you stop thinking about your misery. I don't know about you, but if I stop thinking about my miseries, I cheer up. It's much better. It's much better to think about all the things that the Lord wants to do for you. But there's no quicker way into depression than to meditate on your own evils. It's desperate. So the way I put it is this: if you look down, that's at yourself and your miseries and everything. Everything gets worse. And if you look up, you'll magnify the Lord. So if you look down, you'll magnify the problem. And if you look up, you'll magnify the Lord. That's exactly what Jesus has been teaching Louisa. Yeah. But we used to say these things in the Charismatic Renewal days. Because the Lord gave us a huge foundation there for what we are living here. So she said, I never think about myself and my great miseries. And yet at the beginning of most of these messages, she's trying to tell Jesus about her miseries, isn't she? Okay. But I always pray to repair, to console Jesus for sinners, for everyone. Now, there you have it. The focus is on ministry to the Lord and ministry to your neighbor. That is loving God fully and loving your neighbor fully. And that fulfills the commandments. So while a person living in the divine will appears to be doing nothing because they're not out there doing big, big, big projects, okay, they are fulfilling the two great commandments. However, it's not that I think about it before. No, it's enough for me to start praying. And I find myself at this point, because if you're in the divine will, you start at that point. Now, I was concerned about this. And my beloved Jesus said, my daughter, what is this? Are you concerned about it? You must know that when I place a soul in my will, and she takes up staple dwelling in my volition, since my will contains all possible imaginable goods. Now, you've had that a few times already tonight. The soul feels that she abounds with everything, that you actually don't need anything. And she places herself in my condition. My same condition is not good English. She placed herself in my condition. That is, she feels the need to give. Because that's the way God is. Love lives by giving. Why does love die on the earth? It's because we stop giving. We have to give our time, our attention, our love, our goods, our this, our that. Now, then the more you give, the more you love. And I've told you many times that the Lord told me that a lot of these truths are written into your experience already, because from the moment you said yes to a pregnancy, it was all giving after that, wasn't it? And it's giving more and more and more. And the extraordinary thing is, the one you give to is the one you love the most. And if that person responds very well, that the bond is absolutely extraordinary. But in other words, he has these eternal truths written into our personal experience. Okay. And one of the very sad things about the younger generation refusing to give life is a refusal to love. And if the refusal to love is there, there's nothing in the future for them except a very, very barren existence. It'll be hell, because nobody will love them if they don't love anyone. Okay. So we enter into the same condition as Jesus. That is, we feel the need to give rather than receive. She feels the need. She feels that she needs nothing. And if she wants anything, she can take whatever she wants without asking. Now, I have Acts 20, 35 beside that. 20:35. And I've just remembered something in 2 Corinthians, and it's in chapter 9 now, and I won't have the verse. God loves a cheerful giver.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
It's one of the ones everybody knows. Since my will contains an irresistible force of wanting to give, only when she gives is she happy. Notice that.
Mm-hmm.
And as she, in other words, as we give, we become more like God. Is really what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And as she gives, she becomes more thirsty for giving. And in what constraints she finds herself when she wants to give, she finds no one to whom to give. In other words, you reach a point where it is anguish to have nobody to give to. So happily, Jesus said, the poor will be with you always, whether they are materially or spiritually or mentally or emotionally poor, they will be poor, or whatever way. So in the next paragraph, we discern whether we are in the divine will or not. This is very important. Every now and then he gives us a bit of discernment. So discerning whether we're in the divine will or not is the next paragraph. Okay. My daughter, he said, I place the soul who does my will, that means who lives in my will, in the same conditions as myself. That is, in the divine mode. Okay. I share with her my great joys and my bitterness, as you've heard all the time with Louisa. And everything she does is sealed with disinterest for herself. Notice sealed. Self-interest doesn't come into it. Whereas the world seems to be run on self-interest, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Ah, yes. The soul who does my will is the true sun. Now, a sun is a source of life. Okay, which gives light and heat to all. Now, these are symbols of spiritual gifts. But I want to give you Matthew 5:14-17. That's let your light shine so that people will be able to give glory to God. So the soul who lives in my will is the true sun. That gives light and heat to all. Now, there's something else there that I should give you as well, and that's John 7:37-39. That is that when we drink deeply, out of our own hearts will flow fountains of living water. This is the same message as the light and the heat, okay, that we have plenty to give to others. But of course, Jesus is the living water, so we get everything from him. We have nothing of ourselves. And while she gives to all, the sun takes nothing from anyone, because It is superior to everything, and there is no one on earth who can match it in light and in the great fire that it contains. Now we'd have to explain something. If I'm living up in a spaceship, I can't be looking back to the earth for my food and everything. I'm too far away. I'm too high up. If I'm flying from one end of the earth in a 747 or whatever they have bigger than that nowadays, I can't be going down picking up something off the ground. It's not possible. Now, if I'm living in these high regions of the divine will, I cannot go back to the self place to find something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
We've left it behind.
Yeah.
That's why the image of people in the divine will is the eagle. And the eagle flies higher than any other bird, okay? And lives in a very high place on the top of a mountain, okay? Safe from everybody. And it's a very good image of living in the divine will. So you can't be going back to the gimme generation, you know what I mean? The me generation. You can't be going back to stuff that sort of serves me. You've left that behind. You're only allowing this incredible mystery of receiving everything from the divine will and giving it out to others. So you become a conduit of incredible grace for others. Okay. If creatures could see a soul who does my will, my book continuously says does my will, it means lives in my will, they would see her as more than a majestic sun in the act of doing good to all. Now, the reason why the sun is used as the image there is that the sun gives light to the whole planet. And it doesn't distinguish between the good or the bad. Remember Jesus said that? The sun shines on the good and the bad alike, and the rain comes on the good and the bad alike. Okay, so there's no distinguishing good and bad. So a person living in these high regions of the divine will and operating out of the divine will gives life to everybody, regardless. You don't even ask the question, are they good or bad? That's not your business. Your business is to give the light if you're the sun. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
If you put on a heater in the room, the heater won't ask, now, where are the baddies? I don't want to give them anything. It'll just give heat. And you see, if you use these very, very simple images, something which is really divine makes more sense. Is that all right?
Yeah.
Jesus himself, of course, is the great sun. John 1:8. He's the light. And John 8:12. There are other ones as well. And even more, they would recognize myself in this sun. Now, even before we came to divine will, we would say of certain some people, they're very Christ-like. Okay. So the sign that the soul has reached the point of living in my will is that she feels, and you have to add the word herself to make English, it's feminine because the soul is usually referred to in the feminine. She feels herself in the condition of giving. Now, that sentence is not completed to make sense. She feels herself in the condition of giving in the eternal mode. We're not back there giving on the material. And he said, have you understood? That okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you're aware of yourself giving at this eternal level. Now, if you're doing what I said a bit earlier about bathing the holy souls in purgatory every nanosecond with the precious blood of the lamb, you're giving on this level. You're giving continuously on this level. Okay. And you're having an effect that you wouldn't believe if you saw it. You'll only see it in heaven, the number of souls that have been released because of you. So September the 6th, 1913, the hours of the Passion are the very prayers of Jesus. I was thinking about the hours of the Passion, which have now been written. So she gets to 1913 before the Hours of the Passion are actually written, but she had been doing them for years herself. And how they are without any indulgence, because in prayers in those days, it was 300 days for this and 300 days for the other, you know, stuck onto the prayers to make people pray them, I think. I don't know. I could be wrong. So those who do these Hours of the Passion will gain nothing. While there are many prayers enriched with many indulgences, while I was thinking of this, my beloved Jesus, all kindness, said to me. Now, the title I have over the next paragraph is A Gift of Love. A gift of love. My daughter, he said, through the prayers with indulgences, one gains something. Now, ring the little word something. That means not everything. Is that okay? You get a few sweets out of the bag. You don't get the bag of sweets. But the Hours of the Passion, which are my very own prayers, my own reparations, and are all love, have come out of the very depths of my heart. Have you perhaps forgotten how many times I have united myself with you to do them together? With you, we'd have to say. Okay. And I have changed chastisements into graces over the whole earth. Now, when you consider the numbers, the sheer numbers of people in Ireland who are doing the Hours of the Passion every single day, I'm not remotely surprised. I actually enjoyed watching the storm being pushed out into the Atlantic. And I said, proof. Proof. Yeah, proof that, praying in the divine will is the most powerful thing you can do. Yeah. It's really incredible. So, my satisfaction is so great, he said, that instead of the indulgence, I give the soul a handful of, my book says love, add in the word divine, a handful of divine love, which contains incalculable prices of infinite value. And besides this, when things are done out of pure love, my love finds its outpouring, and it is not insignificant that the creature gives relief and outpouring to the love of her creator. Now, elsewhere, he says that for every single word of the Hours of the Passion done at the divine will level only, you'll save one soul. It's absolutely amazing. For every single word, yeah. So let's come to September the 12th, 1913, and I have a VIP on this one. The reason why I have a VIP in this one is that Jesus begins to explain to Louisa the change in her experience. She's been noticing it for quite some time, but she doesn't really understand it. So Jesus has been speaking to Louisa for about 2 years about his will in a way which he has never manifested to anyone before. From that time, he has substituted the ecstasy of his most holy humanity, that means he would come in three-dimensional form, okay? Yeah. Given to enamor her of his person with the ecstasy of his divine will. So this one is a key text in explaining the shift from one vocation to the other. So Louisa said, I was thinking about how blessed Jesus has changed things. Even when he comes, I don't remain petrified as before. And as soon as he leaves, I feel I'm in my natural state. In other words, she's not in ecstasy and therefore doesn't have to be pulled out of it. I don't know what has happened to me, she said. And what is more, I feel bothered if the thought comes to me or if the one who has authority over me wanted to know about my things. She doesn't want the intrusion of a dozen questions, you know. But good Jesus, who watches over my every thought. Okay. Let me give you Deuteronomy 32:15. He watches over my every thought. Deuteronomy 32:15 says, the Lord alone was her guide. Okay. And he looks after every thought is 2 Corinthians 10:5. Every thought must be captured and given to Christ.
Good.
2 Corinthians 10, yeah. 5. So, my good Jesus, who watches my every thought and wants not even one of them to be out of tune in my mind, told me, "My daughter, would you perhaps want me to use ropes and chains to keep you bound?" See, ropes and chains remind you of prisoners, isn't that right? Or slaves. Once they were necessary, and with all love I kept you bound, pretending to be deaf to some lament of yours. Don't you remember? Or she remembers well. But now I no longer see them as necessary. For more than 2 years now, that's 1911 to 1913, I have wanted to use more noble chains with you. These are my will. Okay, so we've shifted gear completely. This is why, during this time, I have always spoken to you about my will and of the sublime and indescribable effects that my will contains, which I've not manifested to anybody until now. There you have the very clear statement, and nobody can deny it, that Jesus says, no saint, no pope, no anybody before Louisa Picaretta knew of this revelation. He says it himself. So go through as many books as you want, and you will see that in none of them you will find what I've told you about my will. In none of them. That's terribly, terribly important. This was necessary to dispose your soul to the present state you are in, that is, living in the divine will. After keeping you always with me, I knew very well that you could not have endured suffering the continuous privation of my presence had I not substituted it with something. Now, it started really in volume 2, the Lord started receding from her and not allowing her to have as much of his presence unless she was really going through the hours of the passion, suffering the passion, I mean. And so he has been withdrawing and withdrawing. And he said, once you've seen God, the problem is, if you see God, you can't live. That's what you read in Exodus 32, when Moses said, look, let me see your face. I need to really see you. He said, you can't see me and live. Because once we would see God, our soul would literally leap out of the body to go to him. We wouldn't be able to stay here. So in order to complete our journey on the earth, and each one of us has a task to do on the earth over and above, whether you're single or married or anything else, over and above that, each one of us has a task to fulfill on the earth. Some people never know what the task is, which is very interesting to me. But we have a task. And if you've read testimonies of people who have had near-death experiences, the number of people who have been sent back, that your task is not complete. You must go back. And I was sharing this with a class in Dublin last week, and a lady said, that happened to me.
God, yeah.
I was sent back, she said. I was told I had not completed my task. I said, were you told what the task was? And she said, I never thought of asking. That's the amazing thing.
Yes.
I mean, if I was told I had a task to do, I'd say, you mean washing the dishes? You know, I'd ask for an illustration of the task. But somehow in the depths of your being, you kind of know. That's why deep prayer and meditation is very, very helpful, because a person comes to sort of know without knowing, if I can put it that way. You kind of know things inside that you haven't allowed up into your intellect. You know it deep inside of you. So Louisa couldn't have tolerated living, because she's been saying that for all these chapters, hasn't she? So he said, I substituted it with the divine will. So instead of the ecstasy of his physical presence, she now has the ecstasy of the divine will. So, had I not substituted with something still my own, which invading your soul completely, now notice completely is 100%, would keep you captured more than my presence, because the divine will would be there 24/7, 365. that vision of Jesus couldn't be there that length of time. My will took its place in keeping captured each one of your thoughts, affections, desires, words, so much so that your tongue speaks about my will with such eloquence and enthusiasm because it is captured by my volition. I think that's very interesting. Now, what Jesus has said is that Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10 has been fulfilled. Deuteronomy 6, 4 to 10. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your soul, all your mind, and all your being. And this is why you feel bothered when you are asked, how is it and why Jesus has not come as before? Because you have been captured by my will and your soul suffers when they want to break the sweet enchantment of my volition. In other words, the union is continuous. And the enchantment, what they call the enchantment, is that she's absorbed in this union. And Louisa said, Jesus, what are you saying? Go away. Go away, she said. It's my evils that have reduced me to such a state. Now, Louisa and somebody else told him to go away. The other person was Peter. Do you remember?
Yeah.
When he saw the incredible, miraculous catch of fish, he said, Lord, go away. He said, I'm a sinful man. And Louisa is saying go away in the same tone. She doesn't mean go away. She can't tolerate him to be out of her sight. And Peter couldn't tolerate Jesus going away either. So we say, oh, go away. You know, we don't mean that.
Yeah.
You know. Sometimes we translate it into give us a break. It's my evils that have reduced me to such a state. And Jesus smiled in hearing me saying, go away. And clasping me more closely, he said, I cannot go. We're one. If you're fused, if you take two glasses and you put half water in each glass and then you pour one into the other, can you separate the waters? No. They're fused. It's not possible. He said, I can't. We're fused. In other words, look at the permanency of union. It's not only permanent on the earth, it's permanent eternally as well. That's the incredible bit. Could I perhaps separate from my will? He said, if you have my will, I must be with you, because he can't be apart from his own will. My will and I are one. We're not two. Rather, let us come to facts. Tell me, what are your evils? And Louisa said, my love, I don't know. So she keeps on saying I'm bad, I'm this, that, and the other. And yet there's no evils there. So you have to translate the word bad and the word evils into, you know, my feelings. You know, like we have expressions in Ireland that, you know, I got out the wrong side of the bed today. Or things aren't working for me today, or I'm not in a good mood or whatever. That's what she means by bad or evils, okay? And Jesus said, ah, you don't know them. And Louisa said, I cannot know them because you keep me always up above. That means in the divine mode, in the divine will. And you give me no time to think about myself. And at the moment I want to think about myself, you scold me, sometimes severely, to the point of telling me that I should be ashamed of doing that. Sometimes you do it lovingly, drawing me to yourself with such strength as to make me forget about myself. How can I do it? And Jesus said, if you cannot do it, it means that I am more pleased if you don't do it, since my will keeps hold of you in place of everything. And it would see itself being deprived of something that belongs to the divine will. This is why the divine will remains over you and prevents you from thinking about yourself, knowing that wherever my volition holds the place of everything, there cannot be evils. There you have it, as clear as daylight. Hebrews 12:14. Without holiness, no one will ever see God. You can't have divine will and sin. It's actually that simple. Okay. So I want to give you a few other readings. 1 John 2:6. 1 John 2:6. This is an interesting one because John says, we can be sure that we are in God only when the one who claims to be living in him is living the same kind of life as Christ lived. That's what you're talking about here. Jesus said, why are you talking about these evils for? You and I are one, and I make sure you stay in this thing. And 1 John 2:27, you have not lost the anointing which the Holy Spirit has given, and the anointing teaches you everything. And Jesus is saying to Louisa, I'm teaching you everything. In 1 John 3:2, John says that when we're truly living in union with Jesus, we become like him and we don't sin. Okay? You can't have that. So Louisa's finding this difficult, and she says, Jesus, are you making fun of me? And Jesus begins to talk to her about stages of growth. So I would suggest that you write a heading there, stages of growth, and I'll show you the stages as we go along. He said, my daughter, you force me to speak to make you understand how things are. So listen. In order to make you reach a point so noble and divine, I behaved with you like two lovers who love each other to folly. You would never have loved my will so much had you not known me. That's step one. You first have to have a relationship with Jesus. You have to know him somehow. Therefore, first I gave you the ecstasy of my humanity, so that knowing who I am, you would love me. And in order to draw all your love, I used many stratagems of love. That's step two. That's to get her to grow. And you've heard her talking about Jesus playing games with her and all the rest of it. You remember? You remember them, he said, and it's not necessary for me to make a list. Now, after I have drawn you well to love my person, you have been caught by my will and you love it. That's step three. So you have to know him first. Then you have to let him draw you with whatever stratagems of love that he uses. And then he lifts you up into the divine will. And since you could not be without me after so much time, as we had lived together, it was necessary that the ecstasy of my will would hold you in you the place of my humanity. And that's step four. So the divine will then takes over. Everything I have done before have been graces to dispose you to the ecstasy of my will. So everything is leading to this point. Because when I dispose a soul to live in a higher way in my will, I have to manifest myself in order to infuse graces so great. So he said, for each stage, I had to actually prepare you. Is that okay? And so what he's going to tell her in the next section is that the divine will is true and perfect ecstasy. And this is extraordinary, because if we're living in the divine will, you may not feel ecstatic at all about anything. And yet this is the reality that's inside. Surprised, Louisa said, what are you saying? Your will is ecstasy? Yes, he said, my volition is true and perfect ecstasy. And urgent enough for the person to say, it's okay, I'll see you tomorrow. I knew that was what was going on. Where were we?
Just at the surprise. What are you saying?
Okay. Yes, my volition is true and perfect ecstasy. And you break this ecstasy whenever you want to think about yourself. Notice it. We ourselves are completely in control of whether we remain there or not. But I will not let you win. That's Louisa, because she has to live this fully and completely for the rest of us. Great chastisements will come in the near times. This is 1913, so the 1914 to 1918 war is just upon them. Okay, even though you do not believe it, you and the one who directs you will believe when you hear it. In other words, Jesus has talked about great chastisement that's coming, and the priests don't believe it at all. That's just typical, though, isn't it? Yeah. And he said, you'll believe it shortly. And was he right? He was. This is why it is necessary that the ecstasy of my humanity be interrupted, but not completely. Because after all, the divine will is the essence of God. So if you're having the complete union with the divine will, you're in union with Jesus. Because otherwise, he said, you would bind me everywhere. Do you remember she was always trying to stop him from doing the chastisements? So I will let the sweet enchantment of my will take the place of it so that you may suffer less when you see the chastisements. Okay. So here you have Jesus explaining to her that she was living in one particular mode, and now he has translated her into a completely new mode. Okay, a new way of living. And it's there. And the amazing thing is that when we get to the Second World War, Jesus will say to Louisa, look, they want to kill each other, let them do it. And he takes her out of it completely, won't talk about it at all. And from then on, only divine will, nothing else. Absolutely nothing else. He said, you and I will create a future full of hope for them. But at the moment, they just want to kill each other. And he lets them do it. Because God won't override our free will. Okay, so we'll try another one and then we'll stop. So September the 20th, 1913. Everything that happens around and inside the soul is nothing other than the continuous crafting of Jesus so that his will may be fulfilled and carried out in her. So I have a VIP on this one as well. So Louisa said she was thinking about her present state, how little or nothing she was suffering. In other words, she hasn't let go of this, has she? But Jesus said, my daughter, everything that happens around the soul and inside the soul, whether it's bitterness, pleasure, contrasts, death, privations, contentment, and anything else, is nothing other than my continuous crafting so that my will may be fulfilled and carried out in her. I think that's an extremely important statement. Every single thing that happens outside of you and inside of you is him working on you. And I want to give you Ephesians 2:10. We are God's work of art created in Christ Jesus. When I obtain this, all is done. In other words, when he actually gets us to the point of giving the full giving of the will, he said, all is done, and therefore everything gives the soul peace. That's Philippians 4:7. That's the peace that passes all understanding and guards the heart and the mind in Christ Jesus. It seems that even suffering wants to stay away from her in seeing that the divine volition is greater than it is. Now, Jesus explained that to Louisa, volumes earlier, that it's the divine will that gives value to everything. Suffering without the divine will has no value. Okay, and whatever we do outside of the divine will has no value in God's eyes. It's whether the divine will wants it or not. Okay. And yet we don't ask the Lord often enough, do you want me to do this? What do you want me to say? What do you want me to do? How do you want me to respond to this person? Okay. And seeing that the divine will is greater than suffering and that the divine will holds in her the place of everything, surpassing everything, it seems that all pay reverence to her, and I myself, when the soul reaches this point of using everything in order to let me accomplish the crafting of my will, once this is done, I prepare her for heaven. Now I have a big comment on the side. Wow. But I want to give you Ephesians 3, 16 to 21. Ephesians 3, 16 to 21. The Lord wants us to grow in love and be built up in love and to reach the fullness of love. And in reaching the fullness of love, that we reach the fullness of Christ. It's absolutely an incredible thing. No wonder the devil wants to stop us. He must be insanely jealous of what is being offered to us. And he tries so hard to get us not to see what is being offered and not to understand, not to grasp it. So I'm going to stop there because the next one will take us over our time.